Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg, and it has been an amazing couple of weeks in Wisconsin. Governor Walker unveils a controversial budget repair bill that he says is necessary to fix a $3.2 billion hole in the state budget. Public workers say they're willing to pay more for health care and pensions, but vow to defend their collective bargaining rights. There are mass protests in Madison. 14 Democratic senators flee the state to keep the bill from getting passed. Then the bill is also attacked for allowing the governor to sell state power plants without putting them up for bid, for allowing him to make unilateral determinations regarding Medicaid payments, and for potentially shutting down local bus systems like the ones in Wausau and Stevens Point. Next, it gets absurd. The governor is caught on tape discussing political strategy with a prank caller pretending to be billionaire financier David Koch. And today, the Assembly considers the bill, the Senate remains gridlocked, and the governor says he will lay off thousands of workers starting tomorrow. Also tomorrow, the UW Regents discuss an alleged plan to separate UW-Madison from all of the other regional schools around the state. How are we going to fit all of that into 1 hour? Well, to help us out, we've got Jeff Johnson, the chair of the Marathon County Democratic Party and a former chief union steward for the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. Also, Bob Williams of Idea Associates of Stevens Point. He is a veteran Republican Party activist and a former aide to Republican Governor Lee Sherman Dreyfus, who was also UW Stevens Point chancellor. And Rob Menser joins us, the editorial page editor of the Wausau Daily Herald. Rob wrote the editorial endorsing Scott Walker before the November election, but the paper has also said slow down when it comes to eliminating collective bargaining rights. We've got a full docket. You're invited to put in your 2 cents. Just give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. Again, that's 1-800-780-9742. And as I should make clear, as a Wisconsin public radio reporter, I am a state of Wisconsin public employee. I am not a union member, but I would be affected by the changes to health and pension benefit payments. Also, as a University of Wisconsin Extension employee, I could also potentially be affected by any decision to split UW-Madison from the rest of the UW system. So now that we've got the disclaimer out of the way, we can talk about what was really a rather amazing week. And I think before I get your comments, gentlemen, I'm going to play a couple of tapes just to sort of set the table. This is Scott Walker, the first one, recorded at the Wilson Herd Company. This is the Tuesday before last. He had basically just announced his plan. The protests hadn't really gelled down in Madison yet. But then again, he hasn't really changed any of his positions since then. It was also an opportunity that I had to get a full 7 or 8 minutes with him one-on-one. So here's a portion of that conversation with Governor Scott Walker at an appearance in Wausau.
Governor, you've got union members pretty ticked off at you right now. They're calling you a union buster. They say that you're trying to bust the public employees' unions and that the private sector is next, and the ultimate goal is to turn Wisconsin into a right-to-work state. Is that your agenda, or have they got it wrong?
No, for us, the bottom line is my agenda is to balance our budget. And the reality is we face a deficit yet remaining from Governor Doyle's budget, which will expire on June 30th. And we have about a $3.6 billion deficit for the next year we inherited. And for us, the modest reforms we're talking about in terms of pension and health care contributions and putting a reasonable cap on wages are all things that will help not only the state government balance the budget, but ensure that in terms of any other budget reductions in the future, that local governments, school districts, counties, towns, villages, municipalities in general can balance their budgets. It's as simple as we're broke. We don't have anything to negotiate with. We can't come to the negotiating table because we wouldn't be bargaining in good faith because we don't have anything to offer.
You know, the argument is that you're taking collective bargaining rights away from people. This isn't just asking them for concessions. You're taking away bargaining rights that workers have fought and died for in order to achieve.
Well, not in Wisconsin. Wisconsin, the rights that most workers have have been set through the civil service system, which predates collective bargaining.
Would you like to see Wisconsin become a right-to-work state?
For me, I'm only interested in balancing my budget, getting the state going again. For me, this is purely about how do I balance the budget, do it in a way that I can guarantee that all local governments are going to be able to balance their budgets just like the state is.
You didn't directly answer my question. How do you react when people call you a union buster?
I'm trying to balance the budget. Nobody should be surprised. We've talked all throughout this campaign about the fact to balance the budget. We needed reforms in wages and benefits. I talked about it in the campaign. I talked about it a week after the election. I talked about it in December when we fought off the employee contracts that they tried to ram through before we would take office. I talked about it when it came up again at the inauguration. I talked about it 2 weeks ago in my State of the State. Unless someone's been in a coma for the last 2 years, nobody should be surprised about what we're doing.
That's Governor Scott Walker at an appearance last week at the Wilson Herd Company. Let's hear from three Central Wisconsin Democrats. These are some short excerpts from a news conference that was held by Donna Seidel, Louis Malepsky, and Amy Sue Vruwink, all Central Wisconsin Assembly Democrats.
Scott Walker never campaigned on abolishing unions, but his alarming proposal is clearly designed to do just that. This is a sad day for our state. It moves us back more than 50 years.
The governor says the state has to act like a private business. Well, even private businesses do not do this to their own employees. I feel very bad for those public employees in this state who are basically getting shafted by the governor.
This is just a slap in the face. And to call on the National Guard to scare and intimidate the people of Wisconsin is outrageous.
And our guest today on Route 51, Jeff Johnson, Marathon County Democrat and former union chief union steward, Rob Menser, the editorial page editor of the Wausau Daily Herald, and Portage County Republican Bob Williams. Jeff, let's start with you, and we'll do a round robin here. Just give me your general impressions of what you heard in those clips I played and what you've been hearing all week.
Well, I find it a little bit hard to take Governor Walker at his word that it's all about the budget. And that was kind of made apparent last Friday when the heads of the two largest unions in the state, AFSCME and the teachers union, both agreed to the concessions, financial concessions he was looking for. And the governor very simply could have declared victory at that point and withdrawn the bill because he got the money, and it is not symbolic money. It's a serious, it has a serious financial impact. I believe the numbers are about $300 million over the biennium that the state would, you know, recoup from that. So it was not an insignificant, it was actually a huge concession by the unions, but the governor said that's not enough. That makes me think it is not solely about the budget.
And Bob Williams, let's move to you. You've been a long supporter of Republican governors and Republican causes. Your reaction to what's been going on for the last couple of weeks?
My reaction, Glenn, is influenced by the fact that my wife, Mary, in 1971, with her master's degree in her hand, got a job teaching in junior high school for $8,500 a year. Today, she would be starting at more $42,000 to $50,000. And that is what I think is happening in Scott's mind, in that he is saying we can't have this increasing expenditures when the state is dead broke. So we're going to have to stop the benefits programs, and we're going to have stopping this kind of dealing with the problem. I am going to get rid of the, I'm just going to run this state more like it has to be run, strictly by the dollars, and we're not going to give the people what they've been having.
How do you feel about the move to strip public employees of collective bargaining rights?
I agree. I think collective bargaining rights, I wish it were not in the budget. But the governor didn't ask me for some reason, my opinion.
So, well, we're asking you.
Well, it's in the budget, and I've always, you got to remember, there are 26 states with collective bargaining and 24 without. It is not a right in my mind. It's a privilege. And I myself do not disagree with it, but what I do disagree with is that if you don't strip collective bargaining out, then you are going to be subject to the lawyers and the mediators, and you're going to find the expenses continuing to rise, and we don't have the money to pay for it.
Jeff Johnson, if collective bargaining is a privilege and not a right, why did so many people fight and die for it?
It's more than a privilege. It raises everybody's level of income and standard of living when you have unionized household, unionized employers, unionized jobs. It helps everywhere. Now, Bob's probably right about state employees, that it's about half and half across the state for collective bargaining. However, when you look at teachers, which is the largest employee group in this state, 45 out of 50 states allow collective bargaining for teachers. The five that don't rank 50th, 49th, 48th, 47th, and 44th in college entrance scores.
Is collective bargaining a right or a privilege? If it's a right, why isn't it in the Constitution?
There are a lot of things that are considered rights that aren't explicitly spelled out in the Constitution. And I don't pretend to be a constitutional lawyer to be able to definitively say, is it a right, is it a privilege? My feeling is, in order, working people deserve to have some respect. And workplaces actually work better when they have input. It's common sense that you have a better, more productive workforce when they have a say in.
Rob Metzer, your newspaper endorsed Scott Walker. I know we discussed all this, the two of us, before the November election, and one of the reasons that the newspaper endorsed him was you felt that he could bring public employees, public workers, their health care, their benefit payments, their pensions more in line with the private sector. How do you think things are unfolding right now?
Well, I mean, the fundamental thing is that Scott Walker, the candidate, described in pretty detail the pension and benefits contributions that he would be expecting of public workers. And the state is in a budget crisis. I'm not one of these people who believes that that's somehow made up. The budget deficit is real. And a contribution by public workers to pensions and benefits seems like a reasonable step in the direction of solving that budget deficit. Now, the words that were not even uttered in the course of the campaign were collective bargaining. It simply didn't come up. He spoke at length and in detail about the adjustments to pension and benefit contributions. It just was not a part of the campaign that we're going to change these collective bargaining rights.
Your editorial board sat down with him. Right. Didn't he bring it up? Did
right.
you ask him?
We sat down with him more than once. And again, the views that he sketched out, he was his way of selling himself was as the guy who would make the hard decisions on the budget that needed to be made. Rather than doing what both parties actually have been guilty of and sort of kicking the can down the road, he was going to address that structural deficit, take on those hard decisions.
But he never said that he was going to
bust unions or eliminate
collective bargaining.
No,
rights.
The words collective bargaining weren't part of the campaign.
He also never said, did he, that he was going to take that approach not only toward state public employees, but also force local municipalities, cities, school districts, counties to also take away essentially collective bargaining rights for their employees.
Correct. Listen, there's an argument for the types of limits on collective bargaining. It's kind of an interesting argument. You can agree or disagree with it. But it seems to me that it's a big enough change that if we're going to make that change in our state, we should talk about it. There should be an actual debate. And we haven't had that yet. We're having it now in the context of this sort of an emergency bill.
So your newspaper, you wrote an editorial saying that the collective bargaining stuff should be separated from the rest of the bill and the rest of the bill should be passed.
Correct.
Do you think this is enough if candidate Scott Walker had come to you and said he wanted to strip essential collective bargaining rights from all public workers, would that have influenced you? Would you perhaps not have endorsed him as a candidate?
Oh, who knows? I'm not the only member of the editorial board. So for me, it would have changed my view of candidate Scott Walker somewhat. I don't know. We get together and try to hash it out as a group.
Let's try to get some callers on right now. Susan in Wisconsin Rapids has been waiting patiently. Susan, you're on Route 51.
Hi, I have two or three different questions for your guest today. I want to know, first of all, is Scott Walker a native of Wisconsin? Does anybody know?
I don't think he was born in Kenya, if that's what you're getting. Susan, that's just a joke.
That was not my inference, but who knows? His attitude clearly is not a Wisconsin attitude. That's why I was asking. I want to know primarily what is the financial impact of laying off several thousand people? What are the actual dollar facts associated with that? And I also want to know why additional alternatives have not been brought to the table and discussed as options to raising the revenue dollars. I mean, I understand that this clearly is not a financial issue for Scott Walker, but it is a financial issue for the people that suffer the consequences of his behavior and actions.
Are you talking about taxes? Why aren't we considering raising taxes?
Why aren't we considering imposing additional taxes on luxury items? Why are we not considering toll roads? Why are we not considering a variety of different alternatives, higher taxes for things that other states typically charge taxes for that we don't? There are a number of different things in Wisconsin that we do not collect revenue for that have been brought up periodically throughout the course of these discussions that Scott Walker doesn't even want to talk about.
All right, Susan, thanks so much for the phone call. Let me ask Bob Williams to respond to that. Why not? Why are Republicans so reluctant to look at taxing anything right now?
Everybody is reluctant after the last November 2 election to raise taxes. It's just built into the psyche of everyone. And I'm with you, Susan, as far as changing. I think that's it's ridiculous that our sales tax is 5.5. My son in a suburban Chicago with a home bigger than ours and with a swimming pool outside, he pays 60% of what we pay on North Green Avenue in Stevens Point, Wisconsin, for a much more modest house. And he doesn't even notice an 8.75 sales tax. So I think you're absolutely on it. But again, Governor Walker didn't ask me how I felt about raising taxes. And it wouldn't be raising because you would be lowering the property tax by raising the sales tax. It would have to be that way. So that's my answer to that question, which was your second question. I don't remember your first.
The first question was, how is it going to affect the economy to lay off these thousands of people? I don't have any specific dollar figures. I imagine it depends on how many people you actually lay off.
If you lay out 5,000 people, it's going to greatly hurt 5,000 people to lay them off. That's their economy is down the drain. But the economy of the state is so bad that There's so many people out of work or afraid they're going to be out of work or cutting back on work that the economy is hurt, and that is the only thing that I think should be on the table. Jobs, jobs, jobs. That's what the campaign was all about. Now we are diversifying or directing ourselves away from that, I'm not pleased with that.
All right. Susan, thanks so much for the phone call. And I have a message being sent to me that Scott Walker was born in Colorado. I don't have a chance to verify
that. Is he even
that.
Eligible to be governor then?
I think he's on Rocky Mountain High.
You're listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're talking about Governor Scott Walker, the unions, collective bargaining, all of the stuff that's happening in Madison with Republican Bob Williams, Democrat Jeff Johnson, and Rob Mincer of the Wausau Daily Herald, 1-800-780-9742. We'll be back with more after this.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More at umr.com.
I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We are discussing the governor's budget repair bill, the battle over collective bargaining, the demonstrations in Madison, and we're discussing it with you, 1-800-780-9742. And let's go back to the phones. We have Jim in Rothschild. Jim, you're on Route 51.
Hey, Glenn.
Is this Jim Moss? I recognize the voice, I think.
Yeah.
Jim Moss, who's
a candidate for assembly last fall, and when I was interviewed by the Herald editorial board, Rob tried to push me into a specific cure for the for the budget problems. He thought I was holding out on him, but I said that I would depend on some people who have more expertise than I do in that economic area. That's not my area of expertise.
Well, and, Jim, let's get to your question. I know you come at things from a libertarian perspective.
Yeah, well, Chuck Eno or none of the other candidates that I heard last year believed that the budget could be repaired if only the public employees, including municipal and school teachers, could be prevented from negotiating for their benefits. So I've got to think that this budget repair bill includes something besides preventing people from negotiating for their benefits. So is there something in there that we haven't heard about yet? That's what I'm interested in.
Well, I can tell you a couple of things that you might not have heard of. It also allows the governor to sell the state's power plants without putting the measures up for bid. It allows him almost unilaterally to make, through the Department of Health Services, to make cuts to the Medicaid program, decide who's eligible and who isn't eligible. A proposal, apparently the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Fund has pretty much been defunded of money, so there won't be acreage of wilderness being set aside in the state anymore. And because the budget repair bill, the collective bargaining, gets applied to local units of government, we may end up seeing bus service completely canceled in places like Wausau, Stevens Point, and Appleton.
So nothing about higher education or corrections or debt service or the big ticket items.
Let's let Jeff Johnson take that on. Jeff?
Yeah, hi, Jim. Actually, none of that is addressed in the budget repair bill. It will be addressed in his budget address, which he's scheduled to make on March 1st. And from what I've heard, it's about a $900 million cut to K through 12. Just substantial cuts in aids to local communities, your shared revenue. And I think we might have lost him.
We lost Jim, but he's still listening on the radio,
okay.
I'm sure. And Bob Williams, there's also a proposal. Now, this will probably come out in the governor's budget address on Tuesday to split UW-Madison from the rest of the UW system, leaving the other 4- and 2-year regional schools separate from the flagship institution. You've been associated with UW-Stevens Point for a long time. What's your reaction to that?
It breaks my heart. My wife, Mary, spent 11 years on the Board of Regents, and she was a leader in the merger in 1971 that Pat Lucey proposed, Democrat governor, and she really went out and worked her tail off around the state to get that passed. And it breaks my heart to see what this, we're right on the campus here of UW-Marathon County, to see what's happened, that this will now be floating away from a system that is being copied all over the United States that we created, and now it's being waved away by the governor and Biddy Martin, the chancellor at UW-Madison.
Rob Mentzer, what are people on the Daily Herald editorial board saying about that? You've only got a few seconds. I'm sorry.
The main thing that is, it seems weird. It's unclear to me what it's meant to accomplish, and I don't get that part of the bill.
We've got a lot to talk about in the next segment, gentlemen. Rob Mentzer of the Wausau Daily Herald, Bob Williams of Idea Associates, Portage County Republican, former aide to Governor Lee Dreyfus, and Jeff Johnson, the chair of the Marathon County Democratic Party. I'm getting all of my marathons mixed up here, and a former union steward. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. We will be back after this news. Back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. I'm Glenn Moberg. We're coming to you live from our Wisconsin Public Radio studios on the UW Marathon County campus with Democrat Jeff Johnson, former Ask Me Chief Union Steward and the chair of the Marathon County Democratic Party. Also, Rob Mentzer, the editorial page editor of the Wausau Daily Herald, and Portage County Republican Bob Williams, a former aide to Governor Lee Dreyfus. We're taking your phone calls at 1-800-780-9742. The topic today, what everybody is talking about, Governor Scott Walker, his budget repair bill, and also the battle over collective bargaining in the state of Wisconsin. 14 Democrats fled the state. They are still on the lam in Illinois, and now there are efforts to recall some of them. The efforts are being led by Kim Simak. She's one of the people. She's the person who founded the Northwoods Patriots in Eagle River. She's trying to recall Jim Holprin, her state senator, who is in Illinois right now. And earlier this week, I had a chance to talk to both Kim and to Jim Holprin, and here are some of their comments.
You know, it can't always go his way. For the last 8 years, our legislators from the other side of the spectrum had to sit while many things were just railroaded through. The ball has come to the other side of the court. They simply can't just get up and leave like a bunch of children.
Practically every senator, Republican or Democrat, who's eligible to be recalled apparently is the subject of a recall effort. Really indicates how divisive this governor has been. The right to collectively bargain for public workers has been on the statute books for 40 years in Wisconsin. I believe it is a right that should not be taken away.
I don't think that there's any human right to collectively bargain. I mean, we are all Americans here. I think unions had their place years ago. It's impossible to continue down the road that we are on. We are broke.
Gentlemen, that seems to be the crux of a lot of this. Is collective bargaining a fundamental human right, a fundamental civil right that should never be taken away under any circumstances? Or, Bob Williams, is it, as you said, a privilege?
I think it is a privilege, but I completely disagree with her on the recall. The recall that I like to see is going to be in the primaries and the general in 2012. That's an election. That is when we say to Mr. Holprin, if we want to, you're through. You left us. You went to the Clock Tower Inn. That isn't bad. And if you've ever been there, it's a lovely place.
I have been there. I used to live near there at one time.
Okay. $170, $155 to $70 a night for a room is just delightful. But the recall, no. Recalls are something that are all emotion, I feel. Election is there. That is not a privilege. It's a right.
But emotions are running high. Jeff Johnson, do you think that there are going to be recalls? You were talking about perhaps recalling Pam Galloway in another year.
Well, you never know what's going to come out of this. Hopefully cooler heads will prevail and we can, working collectively, solve the budget issue and leave the representation issue and collective bargaining issue on the side, because it truly has nothing to do with the budget. Let's take one thing at a time. Let's solve the budget. The governor should declare victory, accept the money, and let's move on.
Let's go to the phones. Paul in Athens has a question about the Senate Democrats. Paul, you're on Route 51.
Hi. I have a comment on an earlier caller first about why aren't we considering tax increases?
Right.
You know, the majority of the state voted Mr. Walker to be governor on a platform based on no new taxes. So any new tax would not be seen favorably in the state.
And I think so, that even those who say that he's doing some things that he didn't tell us he was going to do, he certainly did tell us that he wasn't going to raise taxes.
Exactly.
And, so there, and if I could just say, I mean, there is an argument against it as we're sort of still in this sort of slow, fragile economic recovery. I mean, tax increases would slow the economic recovery. So there's a substantive reason not to do it, at least right now.
And I think that's a straw man that he did not tell us. Eisenhower never told us in 52 he was going to build the greatest highway system in the world, except for Adolf Hitler's in Germany. And Roosevelt never told us he was going to beat the Japanese imperial nation to a pulp. You don't tell, I've been in 30 campaigns, you don't tell everything you're going to do in any campaign.
Jeff Johnson, let's have you respond.
Well,
to that.
I would say that, you know, the governor did campaign on no new taxes. I concede that. He did not campaign on busting collective bargaining. And the workers, the unions have come, they've offered. I'd say they came to the table, but they haven't been invited to the table. They've been asking. Nobody has yet met face-to-face with the governor. He won't sit down with the union leaders.
Paul,
but even without doing that, he got his concessions.
Yeah.
Paul, you're still on the air. Give us your second question.
Okay, so my question then is, we've got a case now where both sides seem to have stated their point. Nobody's changing their mind. We're at a deadlock. But we have a case where democracy would say we've got a majority. Let's carry on. Let's move on. At what point does, do shows like, you know, What's on Public Radio and things, turn the conversation to, instead of, you know, why are we doing this or not doing this, but turn it to, okay, majority wins, we're a democracy, why won't the Democrats let this happen?
I'll take
that.
Paul,
thanks so much for the phone call.
I'll take that one. You know what? That's an argument that's been going on for quite a long time. I know that the Democrats on the national level had majorities for the past 2 years, and I think we've had a record number of filibusters in the federal Senate. This is no different than a filibuster. They have slowed this down. There have been things that came out of this bill, and after it's been studied, after the clock slowed down, where people had a chance to take a breath and take a look at it, that has raised some serious concerns. And personally, I thank the senators for leaving.
And again, I think it does come down to, do you consider collective bargaining to be a fundamental human and civil right? If you do, if you consider it to be right up there with freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, and I know some union people who feel that way, then no, you know, over my dead body, you don't take it away under any circumstances.
Glenn, it does fall under freedom of assembly. It does. You know, the more I think about it, I think it does fall under a freedom of assembly.
Well, on the topic of sort of getting on with the vote or whatever, I mean, this will be a matter that's going to be resolved in the political sphere, right? Both Governor Scott Walker and the Senate Democrats can't win this standoff, right? Somebody in the public's mind, in public opinion, in the court of public opinion, someone is going to lose that battle. And right now, we're at a weird moment where Governor Scott Walker is positive that he is winning, and the Senate Democrats are positive that they are winning. And we will know the answer, but we just don't know it now. And that's, I think, what will ultimately resolve this is public opinion, is politics.
Let's go back to the phones. Let's take Dan in Wausau. Dan, you're on Route 51.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Just a couple of points. I understand. I know we're in a fiscal crisis in the state of Wisconsin, and I understand that it's probably going to take some pain in order to straighten this out. I just was on Facebook earlier, and I got to listen to the fake phone call by the person out of New York to Governor Scott Walker. The question I have for your esteemed guest is this: after listening to that phone call, and I believe everything on that I heard was true and accurate, here's a question. Each one of you, I would like you to answer for me what your thoughts are on what you think ethical, political representation is. Even though Scott Walker was elected by a majority of the people of the state of Wisconsin, he was not elected by a landslide majority as far as I know. I am not against Governor Walker when it comes to the winner should be able to do what they think is right, but I do think that there has to be some ethics involved somewhere, and after listening to this 20 minutes of talk on a fake phone call, I am really, really concerned about where politics in Wisconsin is going. A lot of companies I know have what are called core values. You should function by the core values. That way the company can move ahead, whether it's a private or public firm. I would like your guests, to each one of them, please give me what they think is ethical political behavior.
Let's
take the answers off the air.
Dan, we will take you off the air, and before we get to that, I'm going to play some of those clips from that infamous phone call in which Governor Scott Walker was pranked by a caller, a guy named Ian Murphy from New York, who writes for a left-wing blog. He pretended to be billionaire financier David Koch. And Mr. Walker not only took the phone call, but talked to him for 20 minutes. And we've got three clips that I'm going to play. Here's the first one.
You know, the next question, I talk to Kasich every day. You know, John's got to stand firm in Ohio. I think we can do the same thing with Rick Scott in Florida. I think Snyder, if he got a little more support, probably could do that in Michigan. I mean, you start going down the list. You know, a lot of us, there's a lot of us new governors who got elected to do something big.
You're the first domino.
Yep, this is our moment.
Yeah.
That's the David Koch impersonator saying Wisconsin is the first domino in taking union rights away all across the country. And the governor says, yep, this is our moment. Here's another clip.
Right, right. We'll back you any way we can. But what we were thinking about the crowds was planting some troublemakers.
You know, the only problem with the because we thought about that. The problem with, or my only gut reaction to that would be, right now, the lawmakers I've talked to have just completely had it with them. The public is not really fond of this. My only fear would be is if there was a ruckus caused, is that that would scare the public into thinking maybe the governor's got to settle to avoid all these problems.
And incidentally, the Madison police chief today, Noble Ray, asked for an explanation for what he says are disturbing and troubling statements that the governor considered putting troublemakers in the crowd of demonstrators. Here's the final clip. This is how the conversation ended between Governor Walker and the David Koch impersonator.
Well, I'll tell you what, Scott. Once you crush these, I'll fly out to Cali and really show you a good time.
All right. That would be outstanding. Thanks for all the support and helping us move the cause forward, and we appreciate it. We're doing it the just and right thing for the right reasons, and it's all about getting our freedom back.
Absolutely. And, you know, we have a little bit of vested interest as well.
Well, that's just it. The bottom line is we're gonna get the world moving here because it's the right thing to do.
All right, then.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Former Attorney General Peg Lautenschlager said she is considering filing formal ethics complaints against the governor over those statements, which she says shows a lack of ethical behavior and an apparent quid pro quo. This is how she looks at it, between the governor taking this phone call and saying that he thinks it would be outstanding if David Koch would fly him out to California for a good time. I'd like all of you to react to that. Bob Williams, let's start with you.
We considered troublemakers. In every campaign, and I've been in 30-some campaigns professionally, I've been in them, you always consider all the alternatives that you have at your hand behind closed doors. You're not going to do it in front of the press. So they considered troublemakers, and they rejected them. So that's gone. That's a false issue. I might add, in my opinion, Governor Walker really doesn't give a darn, because he's a lame duck governor as of this moment. I feel he is a lame duck because of two reasons. One, he is so known, he's the best known governor in the nation now, he'll be with the Hoover Foundation or the Heritage Foundation the day he leaves office after one term. And secondly, I call that one and done. My wife calls it two and through, that he will be chosen to be Vice President of the United States by Romney because he's a Midwestern governor, he's young, he's handsome. Look what happened down in Georgia with Jimmy Carter. They sense something there. They sense a presidency, at least a vice presidency, and he will not be around, is my prediction, in 2015.
Republicans do have a way of picking heavies for their vice presidential candidates. You have Dick Cheney, Richard Nixon picking Spiro Agnew. There's a long record.
Now, I know and like Dick Cheney, so you've picked on me on that one.
I just called him a heavy. Jeff Johnson?
Well, I would say that this phone call really points out that there is a nationwide initiative at work here. And this is not a Wisconsin initiative. This is not a Scott Walker idea. This is a coordinated effort and a coordinated attack on labor unions. When he says, I talk to Kasich every day, we need to stay strong, talking about we as him and the other groups, the other states. And it just points out to me that it's driven by a corporate interest. Why else would the governor, in the midst of all this turmoil, take a phone call for 20 minutes from a man that apparently they have no vetting system or no call screener in the Capitol, and apparently this gentleman didn't sound anything like David Koch. But it just points out to me that this is a nationwide initiative. When he talks about the states, and when the fake Koch says, well, you'd be the first domino, well, and yeah, that is the plan. I mean, that's where he wants to go.
Rob Mentzer, your reaction to all of this?
Well, I mean, it's first of all, it's always going to be interesting when you get to hear sort of an unguarded thing that was thought to be private made public. It's always mm-hmm. interesting. I will, in defense of Governor Walker, in a sense, he was evidently uncomfortable with this concept of outside agitators. It was obvious that he didn't want to come out and say, that's a terrible idea. But he clearly was saying, well, the thing about that, the problem with that, so I'm not sure how far that really goes. What I think is most is most revealing in the whole call is how confident he is that he's winning. It's not clear to me where he's getting that from. He says the public isn't fond of the protest, but mm-hmm. public opinion polls, except for one sort of shady Rasmussen poll, every poll that's come out has shown him on the losing end of this public opinion. So that's the thing that is weird to me is how confident he seems.
And we do have conflicting public right. opinion polls. There have been three different ones. The Rasmussen poll just came out today, and it shows basically a 50-50 split. But even that one shows 56% in favor of keeping collective bargaining rights. The others are showing more of a 60-40 split, if I'm not mistaken.
This is one other thing that really, really kind of disturbs me, is that we have the governor of this state, you know, the chief executive of the state, and his approach during this whole telephone call was so tremendously deferential. Even if some of the things did make him uncomfortable, as Rob said, he's willing to go along. He's willing to play along with this, you know, he thinks he's got this billionaire who financed tons of campaigns around the country and is a kingmaker, and he's playing along even if he's uncomfortable. That bothers me.
We got to take a quick break. We're going to play a couple of announcements here and then come back, and I'm going to try to get the three phone calls that we have waiting on the air. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
The businesses, professionals, and organizations that support Wisconsin Public Radio's programming play an important part in our financial health. When you visit a WPR sponsor, please let them know that you appreciate their support of the station. Thanks very much.
Jeff Johnson, Marathon County Democrat, Bob Williams, Portage County Republican, and Rob Mincer of the Wausau Daily Herald, taking your phone calls at 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to Ed in Wausau. Ed, you're on Route 51.
Hi. I know you guys are probably running short of time, so I'll try to not cover as much as I wanted to. But one thing, I want the panelists to discuss the section of the budget repair bill that would let the governor sell off state's energy assets without going through a bidding process. I want the panelists to discuss why that is in the bill and why, more to the point, it would do away with any kind of bidding process.
Who wants to take that one first?
Glad to jump on that. I think it's in there. It's very clear after the prank phone call. It's there for one purpose. You tie that in with the fact that the Koch brothers opened a lobbying office blocks from the Capitol, have seven lobbyists employed full-time. That happened just days after the election, after Governor Walker was elected. Who's in the energy business? The Koch brothers.
All right,
and
let's
it's a no bid.
Let's let Bob Williams get a word in here. How do you feel about that provision to sell off the state power plants without a bid?
Yes, it has to go through Joint Finance Committee. The government will be involved, and I'm all for it. We shouldn't be running plants like that. Let the private sector do it. And if we can get some money for it, God knows we need the money now. So sell them.
Let's move to Mary in Wild Rose. Mary, you're on Route 51.
Hello. Thank you. I have two statement questions. One is, does Governor Walker have a college degree? I have heard that he does not, and I don't want that just to be gossip.
He does not have a college degree. And
he does not.
I think he went to college, but I think he dropped out before he got his degree.
Seven semesters.
I think that the people of Wisconsin should be notified of that. I think we deserve a governor with a college degree. The other thing I have to say is, who are all these nebulous Wisconsin taxpayers that he keeps speaking of that the protesters are against? Who are the protesters? Chopped liver?
Jeff Johnson, you want to take that?
We're all taxpayers.
Of course, but he doesn't seem to know that.
Your point is wonderfully taken. We all pay taxes. I pay property taxes. I pay income taxes. I pay sales taxes. And I'm gonna pay an additional $4,000 out of my pocket under this. You could consider that an additional tax.
Or my children.
So he said no more new taxes, but except for public employees, apparently.
Yes, so are my children and my husband and myself.
And Bob Williams, do you want to answer the question about taxes, or should we move on here?
I said it before. It's an out-of-bounds issue, No one running for office, no senator, no assembly person is going to raise taxes, period.
Mary, we've got to let you go because I want to get one more call in here and we're running out of time. Thanks so much for the phone call.
Thank you.
And let's move to our final call. We have Steve from Wausau. Steve, you are on Route 51. Hello, Steve.
Hello. Good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Doing pretty
good. Thanks.
I think fabulous.
Great. Thank you very much for the show. Very interesting. It just demonstrates how great our country is that we can debate issues like this and not go set things on fire out on the street. I have two little points. One, I'm curious if the governor's job itself is considered a state job. And if so, I'm curious what kind of concessions he is willing to take, like he is making the rest of the state employees take.
All right, Steve, we're going to have to leave it at that and have you listen off air. And as I understand it, he's taking the same hits to his health and pension benefits that everyone else is.
Correct.
Is that accurate?
That's my understanding as well. However, his salary is about three times the average state worker. So
it should be a heck of a lot more for what they do.
Bob Williams, how do you see all this ending?
I see all this ending with the governor winning because he doesn't care if he loses or wins, but he wants to win because he ain't going to run again. And so it's a sayonara. And we'll judge him after he's gone.
Jeff Johnson, how do you see this ending?
I think eventually we're going to have a compromise. I hope for a compromise. I know there are a number of Republican senators that would love to be able to vote for a compromise, but they're not being allowed to in their caucus. And a number of them are from very vulnerable districts that have a high number of public employees.
Well, a lot of them went for Obama. 14 of the 19 went for Obama.
Absolutely, and they're vulnerable.
Rob Mentzer, very quickly, how do you see this ending?
Not for a while. And if I were to guess, I would guess that Scott Walker wins but takes a whole lot of damage, kind of similar to the way the Democrats won on health care. It hurt them in the polls.
We want to thank today's guest, Jeff Johnson, the chair of the Marathon County Democratic Party, a former union steward for the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. Also, Republican Bob Williams of Idea Associates of Stevens Point, a former aide to Governor Lee Sherman Dreyfus, and Rob Mentzer, editorial page editor of the Wausau Daily Herald. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producers, Jane Ritker and Jacob Claudi. Thanks, as always, to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Next Thursday on Route 51, it's part two of our discussion of the state budget as we get local reaction from Governor Walker's full budget announcement, which is scheduled for next Tuesday. Thanks again for riding along with us today. I'm Glenn Moberg. Until next week, we are heading out of town.